And I'm going to open the public hearing on House Bill 2194. Judy, why don't you go ahead?
House Bill 2194 makes technical changes to standardize the billing procedures that are in statute for the Department of Agriculture. It will allow the statute and what they're actually doing to be the same. The bill authorizes the department to use an itemized statement instead of an itemized invoice to request payment for services, and changes the due date from 15 to 30 days from the billing. They have already begun using this method for accounts due, and the bill will have no effect on revenue expenditure.
Thank you. Representative Krieger, do you have any questions? Staff?
No, I don't.
Is there anyone in the audience who'd like to testify on this bill? No, thank you. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2194. Open the public hearing on Senate Bill 242A. James.
Senate Bill 242A would allow the State Department of Agriculture to inspect and certify processes used in connection with horticultural and agricultural products, including seeds, bulbs, and tubers, when requested by the producer of those products. It authorizes the department to charge a fee for that inspection and certification service. They are already doing certification to provide assurances for domestic and foreign buyers that Oregon agricultural products are produced using good agricultural practices and good handling practices. And the bill would allow the department to expand upon an existing federal pilot program.
Representative Krieger, did you have any questions of staff?
No. Mr. Chair, with the sudden oak disease that seems to be spreading, would this give them any more of a handle on that?
I don't know.
As in nurseries and stuff?
Lisa.
Sure, we have someone here from Ag.
For the record, Lisa Hansen, Assistant Director with the Department of Agriculture. The purpose of this bill is to give us clear authority to inspect and certify processes. Currently, we have been doing some certification for good handling and good agricultural practices. There has also been quite a bit of demand from industry for identity preservation certification. This bill would not have any impact on the sudden oak death issue.
Well, Lisa, it looks like we have lots of time because I don't have the quorum. Could you give us an update on the sudden oak?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, I do not have a lot of information. I haven't been working on the sudden oak death issue personally. I do know that there is a meeting scheduled tomorrow with Senator Wu to look at this issue. We've been working to get the congressional delegation involved and to get USDA moving forward in terms of a national quarantine.
Okay. Do you have any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Again, is there anyone in the audience who'd like to testify on Senate Bill 242A? If not, we'll close the public hearing. And We'll stand at ease. Okay, the committee will come back to order. And first of all, Senator Dukes, you wanted to function last night, but I have a gift for you and appreciation of your work on the committee.
Thank you.
And we will open
it. Give it to me now before we get to the rough parts, right?
No, I want you. I want you.
You might want to listen to the package.
I will open the work session on House Bill 2194. We've had the public hearing, and the I'll just ask: does the committee members who were absent have any questions? Could I have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 2194 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
You've heard the motion. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Motion carries. Meeting carriers, Representative Krieger, would you carry on the full in the House, and I will carry on the Senate. And close the work session on House Bill 2194. Open the work session on Senate Bill 242A. Again, we've had our public hearing. Does any of the members need clarification on the bill? We have a motion.
Mr. Chair, I'll move Senate Bill 242 to full committee with a due pass recommendation.
We've heard the motion. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Motion carries. Again, Representative Krieger, you do the honors. And
we have a volunteer walking in who's. We normally assign that to anyone who's late.
Oh, man, this is a dead animal bill.
Darn it, Eddie. Thousands.
How did you know?
It's a creepy animal disease bill.
Oh, they're really seeds, bolts, and tubers. You're branching out from the seeds, bolts, and tubers.
I'd be happy, Mr. Chair. Whatever serves the pleasure of the chair.
And Representative Dukes, would you carry it on the Senate?
Sure. I can do seeds, bulbs, and tubers.
Yeah. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 242A and open the work session on Department of Ag federal grant application request. Would you like to present this?
Sure. Department of Agriculture requests authority to apply to the Food and Drug Administration for a $50,000 competitive grant. Funds will be used for a demonstration project of a more efficient shellfish testing methodology. If it is awarded, the department will run a new test for paralytic shellfish poison toxins alongside an older test protocol. The new test is simpler and less costly to administer than the current test. The department hopes to demonstrate the new test is as effective in identifying these shellfish toxins and that it will be approved for the new testing standard. Adoption of the new test by FDA should result in lower laboratory costs for the department's shellfish testing program. It is a competitive grant, but there are no matching fund requests. The application is due in mid-July. There is no obligation to continue funding after the grant expires, and all work will be accomplished with existing laboratory staff.
Thank you. Questions of staff? Are you ready for a motion?
Are we in work session?
We are in work session, yes.
Mr. Chair, I'll move that the Department of Ag request be approved for $50,000 grant from the federal government for more efficient shellfish testing. So they're given authority to apply for the grant, if that didn't come out straight the first time.
You've all heard the motion. Is there discussion of the motion? Is there objection? Motion carries. Any volunteers?
Oh, sure.
I actually like our paralytic shellfish poisoning issues.
I defer to my senator.
Senator Dukes will carry.
They probably don't come up.
Close the work session on the Department of Agriculture grant request. Open the work session on House Bill 5034. And Sue, we weren't able to come last night, but in appreciation of your hard work.
Oh, thank you very much. Ticking.
Well, we got the name straightened out. We had a real mix-up, but I'm still trying to gather them back in.
I was supposed to go to Seabird.
So if it blows up, it might have been meant for one of us.
So where are we, Sue?
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, Mr. Coach, we are on the Department of Land Conservation and Development budget bill. When we left off on Monday, we were starting to discuss their work plan, and I believe that that's where we are going to pickup, and there was also a survey that you wished to have discussed also. And then we do have some packages on which you could have heard some decisions from them, so we need to hopefully complete that piece of the budget bill as well, and some continuing discussion on performance measures and ending balance review.
Let me ask the co-chair, I don't know what your time frame is. We could go through the study and the response from the staff and then do votes later on, or we could try to finish going through the package. I'd really prefer to go through the first.
Proceed with that.
Okay.
I can be here when you need me.
Okay, we can call you when we need
sure.
to vote.
Mr. Chair, we told staff, are you aware that I am required to be in the president's office at 1:30.
For how long? You know.
I don't know. Discussion on the package.
I think it'd be appropriate if we had the discussion prior to our voting. It might go smoother.
I just wanted to make sure that.
And we can try to contact you or something.
Right, when it's over.
Okay. Yes, thank you very much. So, Nan, are you on? Where are we at here?
Chair Mazzoli, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Nan Evans, the interim director of DLCD, and I need just a bit of clarification how you want me to proceed. We've got a bunch of follow-up questions from Monday. We've got the action plan that we stopped in the middle of and the University of Oregon survey. How would you like me to do this?
Why don't you just do the same order you just expressed?
Okay. Teddy? The discussion on Monday, we went through the packages, identified a number of follow-up things to bring back to you. And Teddy's bringing this forward. And what you will see, I'm going to pace this a bit here, what you will see is a variety of things. There is, I believe, an organization chart showing the packages, what would result from approval of the various packages for the 0305 budget, pointing out where folks are and showing the decrease from last biennium's position authority of about 60 down to about 48. We also are providing in response to questions on package 107, the public involvement package. That package, as you recall, is a package to target training and information to local elected officials and planning commissioners. This, I will point out the link right now to some of the findings that came out of the U of O survey. And this is a way that we're attempting to meet some of those needs. We have the ability to do it with federal funds in the coastal communities. A question that was specifically asked by Representative Morgan was, what's the most effective way to deliver these services? And there's a memo to you titled Package 107 that says, we believe for the coming biennium, the most effective way is for there to be one or more competitive contracts that the department would issue with the participation of local governments in developing the RFP and in evaluating proposals that come forward. This way we would eliminate overhead, it would make it easier for the local jurisdictions, and we could have the best service for the best price and a service deliverer that the local jurisdictions selected. We are, for your information right now, providing some of that service through one of our coastal field reps who retired just recently, and he's actually going out and seeing what some of the needs are. So we've got kind of a pilot project going on right now. Questions on 107?
Nan, we'll do it here now. In the future, could you put dates on these?
I'm sorry.
I don't know about the rest of my committee, but I know I find it very helpful sometimes as we go through the process to make sure we've got the latest updated.
Chair Messerly, and you know, as I'm looking through these, some of them have dates and some don't. I apologize for that. We will make sure that doesn't happen in the future. On package 109, which has two parts. One is transferring some of the transportation growth management staff to the Department of ODOT. The second part is using the general fund savings essentially from that transfer to fund one position in the agency that would be actually sort of the development go-to person. The agency has, for example, a go-to person on farm and forest issues. We do not have a person who is a specialist in development.
Excuse me, Nan. I don't have the 109 package, or did you have it?
It's called industrial sites.
Okay.
I'm sorry, this is a function of having too many people prepare these all at once overnight.
I saw that.
So that's called industrial sites. The question that I believe you asked, Senator Messerly, was respect to the work that's currently being done by the Economic Community Development Department with respect to the 25 industrial sites. We did a little bit of quick phone calling over there. We are working with them. We understand that currently there are about 160 sites that they're evaluating to try to get to the 25. You asked how many of those sites were developed and how many of them were sort of green fields and how many were old sites ready for development. The economic development people actually don't have a number on that for us. It's a mixture of sites. And I did want to point out to you that we are involved in that process with OECDD, mostly from the standpoint to make sure that the 25 sites, that there are no land use constraints on them, that they get that stamp of approval on that.
Nan, did you have I thought you held up a scheme of your staff members?
Yeah.
Did we have
I think maybe... I'm sorry, I think maybe we didn't get that one out. I asked Teddy if she needed a cart when we came over, because she's got that sort of big thing full of handouts. So sorry about that.
And I have a question on that as soon as we receive it.
Sure.
Representative, go ahead. You have a question.
Yeah, Nan, you mentioned that you're working with OECDD regarding those specifically those 25 sites, so they'll be kind of shovel ready to go. What's the process of doing that you can do with these 25 sites that isn't what you might be able to do with other type requests? Are you going to get there that much easier with these through a process? Are you changing the process?
Chairman, as the Representative Krieger, what we're doing is working with OECDD as they have their list of possible sites, and they're looking for those sites that don't have constraints on them that they can then certify and offer to the development community nationwide, perhaps even internationally. We've got our field representatives who know those sites and know the communities they're in, looking at them to make sure they're, for example, perhaps within a UGB, already zoned industrial. What we're doing is looking through all those sites with them, as they also are looking for other members of the team are looking for other issues. We're just looking for the land use issues. And we can help anybody come forward and look at a site that way. And in fact, that would be one of the functions of the staff person in this package 109, could be kind of the go-to person to help someone, either a county or a city or a developer, say, I've got this site, you know, can I do something with it, or what do I have to do with it? Right now, we don't have really that capacity, except in our field reps who can, you know, amongst their other job, go, well, yeah, this might work. We're hoping to have someone who can really be a development specialist.
So then it would be specifically for that person to be the reach to person, work right with them on the ground, site by site.
Chenezley, Representative Krieger, let me sort of make one other comment about why this particular position is important to me, and that is I have heard very loud and clear, and I see it as I look around the agency, that we have a great need to change some of the regulatory culture, change some of the traditional focuses of the department, and I candidly really very much want to have some people in staff who can work with some of our other staff members and represent some of the development issues that, in fact, are related to some of the land use goals. We have a Goal 3 and 4 specialist, Farm and Forest specialist. We do not have anybody who's a specialist in a sort of set of development goals, and that's why this is important to me.
And brought to mind, you said if they are already cleared in their zoning, in these industrial sites. Some industrial sites are waterfront related, like in Peace Bay and some of the other coastal towns, but there's absolutely no demand for the waterfront usage. And it is a zone change or a conditional use or something that needs to happen, but it's a very valid industrial site, except that it's zoned for waterfront. Do you include that if it's got a conditional use or something that needs to be corrected? Does that take them off the list? Or?
I think, Senator Messley, you're probably answering a question that we aren't to that stage yet. And I think one of the criteria would be how easy would it be to rezone. And certainly in some communities, if there's an excess of water-dependent industrial lands, we've developed a process to get, and certainly in Coos Bay that has worked, that would be available.
Representative Johnson, then Representative Krieger.
Thank you. I apologize for stepping out for just a second. You were talking about within your planning division, if I understand, you creating a position that is the go-to guy, for lack of a better word, for development issues. Could you distinguish that from the urban development?
Sure. That person right now is sort of the UGB specialist. What do you need to do a needs analysis if you're a community to analyze and assess and then plan for UGB amendments? And that's really what that person does most of the time.
To distinguish between the two positions, if you had a development person, this would be someone that, were I a developer, I would feel as though maybe I had some access inside the agency to deal with issues specific to me.
Chair Mesley, Representative Johnson, yes, that's the intent.
Just a closing comment, Mr. Chair. I think that that's a very interesting concept, given the clear nexus between land use and economic development. And I know that for a long time there has been the reality, the perception, if not the reality, that there have been different staff assigned to particular interest areas, that if you wanted to go dig rock, you had an advocate inside the agency. I think it makes perfectly good sense that if you were a developer, you had someone with expertise in those kinds of issues inside the agency, with the idea of being able to facilitate understanding the regulations, getting through the regulations, and having some level of advocacy at the agency on behalf of developers who wanted to do it right. And the concept certainly makes sense to me.
Let me, if I could tail on to this, Representative, before you have your question. How do you deal with conflicts between these different staff members within your agency if they've got very distinct...
Big club.
Pardon me?
A big club.
You need to borrow your club, you think?
Yes, Senator Messley, there is one of those. Representative Krieger's office. I think you're asking, Senator, a basic management question, is how do you deal with differences of opinion among staff? And I think as a manager and a director, you apply kind of the basic principles. You hear people out, check the facts, and evaluate the situation, and work with them, and if there are other affected parties, involve them as well, to find a solution. I actually don't want to club one or the other of them. But
so there are no developed policies or structured protocol where there is conflict?
They're not other than just your basic good management practices.
Has that been a problem? Have you? I mean, I would guess that it is at times.
Chair Mesley, it certainly has been an issue where members of staff disagree with each other. We've had several recent examples where there have been disagreements, and again, you just sort of work it through. I have held up some pretty clear principles to my staff about how I expect them to work. And when a decision is made, the expectation then is they'll support that.
Well, let me ask it maybe a little bit different way then. If there is a disagreement and they can't come to resolution, is there a point where the director can...
Yes, sir.
And move forward?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Representative Krieger.
I won't go there, sir. Regarding these sites in and out of urban growth boundaries, how does periodic review affect whether those sites could be used? Does the periodic review have to be done for that site to be ready?
Chair Meserly and Representative Krieger, periodic review is a tool that's available for a local community to update their comprehensive plans. One of the things that a community might choose to do is update their plan to provide for additional industrial development sites or commercial development sites. So that is one way they can adjust their comprehensive plan to do that. There are other ways. A basic plan amendment would be another way. In certain situations, initial use permit. In certain other situations, the kind of thing is the mill site bill that passed here, I guess, some months ago by now. In terms of the 25 sites, in looking for those sites that are shovel-ready or ready to go, we will look for the ones where the pathway is the cleanest. And those would likely be ones that are already within UGBs, already zoned industrial, or meet some of the criteria in the mill site bill where you can move it quickly. But that's, I think, what we would be looking for in those 25 sites. Realizing, of course, that... I'm speaking for a moment for OECDD. The 25 sites is just the first short-term step. One wants to continue down that path, but that's the first focal point.
And the reason I wanted to see this scheme this morning in a meeting with the co-chairs, as we were going over your work plan, the concern was discussed as to whether, because so many items in the work plan, you have indicated that you could absorb the cost of those implementation. And so the question came up with your reduction of FTE. Want some discussion on how you're going to satisfy your, achieve your goals in the work plan without additional funding. Actually with less funding?
Chair Mesley, that's a really hard question. And let me try to answer it this way. The action plan identifies a number of changes in how we do business, so those shouldn't be a cost item. It also identifies a number of things that do have costs, getting people out in the communities, having sort of network meetings. My intent, because I believe it has to be done, is that we will simply prioritize our available resources. I know I can't ask for more resources to do this. I will do this within the resources I've got. I will also say to you, sir, that it will be a challenge. As I have looked through the component pieces of the budget I inherited, there are some things that frighten me a bit in terms of the available resources and the reductions in the various S&S categories are all 30% or so. I'm talking general fund. 30% reduction in the available money for travel. Something over 30% for the available money for attorney general costs. It will be a very challenging management process to do this. Some of the action items, in fact, respond to that. For example, one of them requires my approval before we take a request to the Attorney General. That is merely a cost containment move. Another of them gives the responsibility for each of the division managers to manage within a set budget. Prior, all the budget was controlled centrally, and the managers didn't know how much they were spending and couldn't make the decisions based on how big a travel budget do they have. So what I have done is task each of the managers with the job of managing the budget they'll get when this biennium starts. We've got some draft figures for it. We will obviously fine-tune it when we have a budget. But those are mechanisms that will attempt to address the issue that you so rightly raised.
So, Nan, I would assume that the managers schedule their staff and know where they're traveling.
Yes, sir.
Is that being followed now, or is it individual staff members?
Chair Messerly, it is just settling into a practice of now knowing what travel is going in. We also have, just starting, actually yesterday, we do have all of our field representative staffs located within the region they serve. We have two on the coast in Waldport. We have two in central and eastern Oregon in Bend. We have one in the south who's actually been there. And we established a small office in Eugene where we've co-located one of our field reps with the Lane Council of Governments staff. It increases the rent a small bit. I can tell you I've looked for really cheap rent alternatives. But I think it will also not only reduce travel costs, but it also will mean our field staff are in the communities they're serving.
And did I hear you say that you have two coastal staff, both located in Waldport?
Yes, sir, that's correct. That's as of about a month ago.
Because you had one in Tillamook and one in Waldport.
Chair Messerly, we actually had one in Waldport and one in Salem.
Yeah.
And that second one is the individual who was in Salem is retired. The person who is taking that job, we've relocated them to Waldport, so the two of them now share the office that they're co-located with the Port of Alsea.
I assume one of those is North Coast and one is South Coast.
Yes, that's correct.
Waldport is in the North Coast.
Actually,
the southern end of the North Coast, and the other one has a long ways to go to get to the South Coast.
Both of them have a long way to go. It's the difficulty, as you know, on the coast, is it's so linear that it's kind of hard to be in a place that's very central. So we
kind of like your Senate district.
Right. That's why I'm so interested in this. Is there interest in trying to locate them centrally in the northern section and the southern section?
Chair Messerly, that's sort of in the long-term plan of then finding if there are better places to be. There's some advantage of having the two field reps together because we can have sort of more consistency of advice. We can have backup in a single office. We can have all the resources in a single office. So in the long-term evaluation, we will look at, does it make more sense to move one way north and one further south, or is it better to keep them more central? And that's an evaluation process.
I just have to say that as I go through the survey, it seems to me a tremendous need to have people as close to the communities as you possibly can. That came out many times. One more question and then a statement I want to make is that the discussion with the co-chairs this morning was that this was your work plan that you developed and presented to the committee. On one hand, and on the other hand, we certainly don't want to set you up for failure.
Thank you, sir.
Somewhere between there, we've got to have an understanding that the goals that you've set for yourself in the work plan are achievable, and that there's a need for you to be reporting back so that we can have updates as to whether you're able to move towards your goals, running up against obstacles. And I guess we just... I think the co-chairs and I are both, or all of us are interested in truing that up and mm-hmm. making sure that it's doable. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to follow on it a little bit deeper depth of detail than where the chair was with respect to prioritizing. Given that the agency is taking such severe cuts, and you mentioned one of them in your legal, your ability to respond to lawsuits. And you're faced with a very real prospect of huge lawsuits. I'm thinking specifically with respect to the channel deepening project. Knowing that that's coming, how will you prioritize? Lawsuits have timelines built into them, and you may have to pull people off to do that. If the whole idea is to get the agency to a point where the distance between an idea and yes is not so far, and it looks as though this legislature is poised to cut the agency so severely, even in the face of some issues that we know exist, talk to me a little bit about how you're going to manage, say, legal expenses for a lawsuit that in all likelihood is going to be protracted and aggressive.
Chairman of the Representative Morgan, priorities certainly assume some element of choice, and there are many things we will not have a choice about. I am sure we will have lawsuits on that issue that will be coming our way that we will have no choice but to respond to because we must represent the state's interests. In those areas where we have some level of choice, I think the answer is as we evaluate whether or not there are fundamental goal issues at stake that are not being addressed by other parties to a conflict, whether there are fundamental resource values or fundamental elements of the economy that would be important enough for the agency to become involved in a legal framework. Let me, however, not have too rosy-colored glasses on here. I'm very concerned about our AG budget. I was shocked when I realized, when I actually started looking at this budget I inherited and thought, what am I going to do? And you know, all I can do is tell you is we will respond where we have to respond to protect the interests of the state. We will respond where there are clear goal issues that no one else is addressing. And Chairman Zwayne, Representative Johnson, it's entirely possible that you'll see more of me in the interim if this is something we can't manage.
Well, Mr. Chair, taking off on something you said that you didn't want the agency to fail, and in reading the work plan and in thinking about what may be ahead in terms of unforeseen AG costs, and I'm also reflecting on what the agency has historically been. I mean, there have been those developers who have seen the agency as the bulwark of the defense of land use, come hell or high water. If we get to a point where the agency is so unable to function and it can't go in a direction to try to have a new mindset to sort of facilitate economic development and help the development community, we so cripple it that it can't respond and be the bulwark, the defender of Senate Bill 100 and the defender of our land use system. How do they not end up being completely ineffectual to everybody? The land use stalwarts are disappointed that you haven't been there as the guardian and the protector of a now 30-year-old framework of land use. The development community is disappointed because permits take time, counter fatigue, for lack of a better word, occurs. There is no staff, no energy, no ability to be proactive in trying to anticipate where your agency could smooth the way for appropriate and thoughtful development. And we end up with an agency that isn't fish or fowl. And I guess I'm looking for the director's response to that, because at the culmination of this budget process, you're going to be asked to be the front guy on the lines. Am I wrong in that, in the picture that I've painted, or have I adequately laid out a dilemma that I don't know how you do succeed?
Chair Bezzel and Representative Johnson, I think you have adequately described one of my nightmares. As a public servant of the state, my job is to do the best I can with the resources I've got. I will commit to you the way I try to commit to you that this is how we will try to do business. If we have a process where I can be reporting to you about how we're doing, I hope to be able to share our progress or our difficulties with you. It is a very challenging situation to be, I don't think perhaps any agency at this point in time, to have such few resources and so many needs in the state. I, for one, you know, we'll pledge to do this job as long as I can do it well. And Representative Johnson, I don't know how else to answer that question.
And maybe it's one of those questions that it is more rhetorical than demands or expects an answer from you. But I'm just saying, I think at some point, we as policymakers need to have a really thoughtful discussion about what are our expectations. If we are disappointed in the old, litigious, rigid DLCD, protector of the land use program, even in the face of common sense, and I mean, I'm describing an extreme view that some people, a view that some people may hold of the agency. And you abandon those that want you to have that model. I mean, I don't know what we want you to do at the end of the day. If we have a bold new design that sends DLCD in a different direction, asks you to be a partner with economic development, asks you to do business differently, to facilitate getting to yes on all the responsibilities that you have, then are we not, is it not incumbent upon us to provide the funding to do that? And right now I see us receiving your plan and kind of looking at it line by line and saying this is okay, this isn't okay, we think this more of this, less of this. But internally, have you given any thought to maybe a new structure or a new framework or a new way of doing business that you could come to us and say, beyond just this plan here, it might make sense to merge us into to OECDD. It might make sense for, I don't know, I'm making this stuff up, but instead of just coming up with a business plan that is, this is how we're going to do what we've done with less money, is there a different way of thinking about what your responsibilities are that maybe make it easier to have a land use system that protects those values that we think are important in keeping Oregon a livable place, but still facilitates the end of putting Oregonians to work and getting land that could be put into to different uses than it is now in those uses?
That's a big issue.
Chair Mesley, Representative Johnson, let me make an attempt to answer some pieces of that.
This isn't a quiz. There's no right answer. I think my colleagues just pointed that out.
Let's have it under there. The answer is yes, we will continually look for options. I think in the action plan there are a number of efforts to start that. The notion of doing some self-assessments and setting performance standards. The notion of getting some training in regulatory streamlining from those who know how to do it. And we've started all of that. What the answer of those efforts might be, I'm not sure yet. We also have a number of discussions going on in the building about changes in the periodic review process. I'm absolutely committed to the legislation that will hopefully eventually get here that will look at how to deal with first the short-term issue of getting the bunny out of the boa, or whatever the phrase is for the backlog, and the longer-term issue of what is the role of periodic review and how does it work, and the notion of having an advisory group of external stakeholders to help out with that. There are other pieces of legislation. One is currently 2912, which is the notion of a two-biennium task force to look at what the state wants from its land use program. And I would hope that resources could be put in that effort. We cannot do it, well, we collective, not DLCD, the collective state cannot do it without some resources, regardless of where it's housed. But I think if that effort goes forward, we can have a larger conversation about what the future is. But we cannot do that kind of thing without the resources to do it. And I apologize to all of you for that not being a really incredible answer. I don't have an incredible answer.
I have a couple of comments, Representative, if I might. And then, are you intending, when you do these task force or these work groups, to do that in-house or contract that out to or outside groups? It would seem to me that it would be helpful, quite frankly, to do it out of house, to get a clearer picture of what.
Senator Mesley, the current discussion on House Bill 2912 has a very much out-of-house kind of task force where there would be gubernatorial appointees, legislative appointees, and not the same old cast of characters, but some of the sort of statesmen in the state who can think about the future of Oregon. It's not meant to be a DLCD navel-gazing atmosphere. And the draft legislation for the Periodic Review Task Force, the notion there is that they'd be external stakeholders. Some of the identified interests on there now include the League of Cities, Association of Counties, and we would look for an outside spectrum of folks.
But you would conduct the study, or manage the task force yourselves, or would you totally outsource it?
Senator Mesley, I think the image that we're using on the periodic review task force is something similar to the existing Transportation Growth Management Advisory Council. Let me get my phrases right. In terms of management, it's not much of a management process. Some of our staff it, and the committee is chaired by a outside of the state chairperson. The task force, the sort of big look task force, as it's currently envisioned, as I said, it needs to be staffed and managed. And whether that staff is in the governor's office or whether it's in DLCD or whether it's somewhere else, it's just something that's not been discussed yet. And that's.
I want to make one other comment to expand on what Representative Johnson mentioned. Representative, you mentioned that something about fish and fowl, and brought to my mind that this is not unsimilar to what this body went through with Fish and Wildlife last session. And if we, as we develop how the department will report to the E-Board of the Legislature, it is so that we can keep pace with what's going on and be of assistance or give direction. And I think that's important. But, you know, it is going to take a tremendous effort and a very focused effort and, quite frankly, thinking outside the box and how a different way of doing business. So I think this is an opportunity. It's going to be a difficult couple of years, maybe a year and a half. But I think it's very positive overall for the state of Oregon and for the department. Representative Krieger.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair.
You haven't forgot your question.
No, I have. In fact, a couple have come on since then, because this morning, Nan and I had this very conversation talking about Director Ball, where that agency was 2 years ago, and not to destroy this agency, but help it become credible and acceptable and working with the public and getting to where you need to be. So I think you're again hearing from other members that this is where we want to go. It's not to put people in a penalty box. Getting back for just a moment, we're talking about the lawsuits that the agency might incur regarding Columbia River dredging. I think in a larger picture, litigation from those who can't achieve their goals legislatively in this building is something that we're going to be dealing with more and more in the future. The lawsuit against Jim Brown, for instance, is a good thing where, you know, his issuing a permit constitutes a take under the 4D rule, endangered species. And that was a concern I had to start with, that thought or that principle means that all agencies that are involved in the permitting system like you do and working with that, we're all going to be subject to that that type of thing. And the goals of those people that they can't achieve here, that's how they've done it. They've done it historically that way. And I don't know how an agency budgets for that. It gets worse and worse as we go.
Come back to the e-board.
Yeah, that's what they're going to have to do, is come back to the e-board. So, just a comment.
Representative Johnson.
Respectfully, I just feel compelled to add one more thing. And that is, people that come into this building and attempt to get legislatively what they cannot get in litigation, or to undo what they have lost in litigation, I find equally troublesome.
Well, I agree. I just have to editorialize on that. It's been my observation that the closer you live to Salem, the more local issues you try to solve here at the legislature. I mean, you see it here in the Willamette Valley, in Portland, around the Salem area. When you get farther away, it's just not practical to try to lobby it and solve it up here. That's been one of my pet peeves since I've been in this business. Man, I think we about worked that piece to death. What else do you have to go through here?
Chair Mosley, let's see if I think I'll pick back up on follow-up discussion on some of the packages we talked about on Monday.
We've done 107 and 109.
Right. On 110, you asked for two things. One was a copy of the draft federal guidelines and a copy of how summons money has been spent in other states. That is another undated memo. I apologize. But it is titled Package 110. Again, let me remind you, this is a source of funding that's been around for a couple of years, but what has happened is the first couple of years, the projects that were funded out of this pot of money were earmarked by Congress to go to particular projects. Just this year, the federal government has said, well, let's perhaps try a different plan to distribute some of that money. And they're requiring states to prepare a plan, according to their guidelines, in order to be even eligible for receipt of future monies. And I brought this to you because we just became aware of it. I did not want to go further as an agency and put in a grant application unless I'd had legislative approval to do that. And that's why it sort of came in here sort of kind of at the last minute. What you have is in the package is a list of projects that were funded in federal fiscal year 02, and that would have been before this you do a plan before you can get the money kind of thing, as well as federal fiscal year 03. For the 04 year, it's the do a plan, then we'll give you them. Then you would be eligible to get money if you came forward. You'll note that the recipients vary from local jurisdictions, parks departments, various entities who can either own or manage property. And I would leave that to your discretion about what you want us to do with that. The questions before I go on.
Are you two describing the federal program that you were going to apply for? I think we're interested in defining that better.
The program provides funding for a variety of things, ranging from public access, estuary wetlands protection, brownfields cleanup. I think there's even one in here that's a reuse of an industrial site somewhere in New Jersey. So it's a broad spectrum of potential projects, all directed at essentially the coastal environment. And it would be open space. It would be public acquisition in some cases. It would be restoration in others. There's a pretty broad spectrum of things here.
Sure. Public acquisition of what?
Well, as I'm reading through the way they fund it in the past, there's been some money that has gone to there's one I'm looking here in FY 2002 to acquire some land around Mobile Bay for recreation and open space. I think it would be that kind. There's another acquire acres in Long Island Sound for a shoreline trail. It would be that kind of acquisition.
Mr. Chair, I think there's 17 or 18 that they did last year, which is nearly half, or acquisitions of properties. Dan, do we have any idea how many of these were private ownerships to? We wouldn't know that, would we?
Representative Krieger, I haven't a clue. And if you want that kind of information, we can go back to our federal partners and find out. The way I would see this as a potential use for Oregon, certainly DLCD doesn't own, manage, or do anything with property. But, for example, a county park department or the state park department, if there is a site adjacent to a state park site. You know, currently, state parks uses primarily Measure 66 funds. This could be an alternate source of funding. Again, it's competitive, and it's competitive nationwide, so we're not assuming that we would even get any. But it could be another source of state funding for purposes such as a state park or a county park or a city park.
I think we do need more detail on that on the program, and I guess I'm interested in how much control that NOAA exerts over those programs, whether it's buying property or whatever, after the project is funded. And I guess I'll say it from my own perspective that Oregon, at least those of us on the coast, or probably statewide, many people are very cautious of what kind of programs we get started, and what where is it leading down the, where is it leading down the road, and are we getting into something that really is a burden to the state of Oregon.
Chair Mesley, understandably, and that's one of the reasons we're here in front of you. Now, if I understand your question, you're interested in the level of federal control over a property or a project that is funded through this. It may take me a few days to find an answer, because I'll go back to NOAA to find that answer. Is there anything else I can get for you?
Oh, I'm trying to think here how to phrase that maybe better, but I think if you sense what myself and others have said in previous days of our concerns, right?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Krieger.
I've got to read this to you because I know you're going to love it. Like the Forest LASIC program after which the CELCP was modeled.
where you at on that?
Oh, what is that? What page is it?
Mr. Chair, why don't you save Nan a whole bunch of research?
I'll show it to you soon.
Okay. All right. Let's move on then.
Okay. And then, Chair Mazzoli, members of the committee, I believe the last basic follow-up information was with respect to Package 302, labeled Package 302, and apologies, not dated. This is with respect to the Coastal Local Grant Program. We had a discussion on Monday about the allocation plan that was developed for 0103. This package includes a copy of that. I also pointed out it was included in your presentation document. It also includes a copy of what was mailed to all coastal jurisdictions announcing the current grant cycle. This is also posted on the homepage of the department's website, identifying the types of grant monies available, the basic planning grants, the priority project grants, the small-scale construction grants, and the non-point source pollution control grants. This was issued within the last couple of months. Also included is a letter to local jurisdictions providing some additional background and how to fill out your grant proposal thing. I think we went overkill here. We've also given you a copy of the grant agreement.
Nan, you mentioned the non-point source. Is that grants through EPA, or where did those points
actually come from? Chair Mazzoli, that is a grant through a special program in NOAA. It is tied with the EPA grants, but it's an entirely separate pot of money. And on the last... Patty, did we get the map? Okay, sorry. On the last page on this 301 package is a map produced by our handy-dandy GIS people who heard the conversation about boundaries. The coastal zone, as defined in the federal program, is all the light gray area. There is a small piece of the coastal program related specifically and exclusively to stormwater control and non-point source pollution. And the boundary that was described for that little piece is this darker, includes all the gray, and includes the darker gray, which is the watershed of the Rogue and the Umpqua. And this is why when Representative Morgan asked the question, why did grants pass get money? They were eligible because for this small pot of money, the non-point source pollution, recognizing, as I think Representative Krieger stated, things flow downhill, there's this slightly larger geographic area that's where jurisdictions are available for some of the funding. And in this particular case, I think it was last year, Grants Pass came forward with a very good project that was eligible for this pot of money. It's a very restricted pot of money. And because they were in this bigger area, we were able to give them some money.
Questions? Okay. Ben, thank you.
Now, Chair Mazzoli, that is the end of what I think were the basic follow-up questions on packages. We can now move to look at the action plan, which is where we stopped on Monday, was when we were going through that, if that's the will of the committee.
Okay. Let's see, which document are we on?
This is a document that looks like this, and landscape is labeled June 30th. What I want to reiterate to you...
June 30th or 13th?
30th. Handed out to you last Monday.
Maybe I didn't bring the right one down.
Chair, I also somehow thought I'd left it in my book, and it's my absent mind. I didn't know what it was.
Sure. I might have it here. Do we have an extra copy?
Run back upstairs.
Mr. Chair, I can go make extra copies if you don't mind.
That's okay. That'd be great, though. Thank you.
Could you do that real quick?
I certainly will. I'm going
to figure, do you have yours?
I do. You get another attaboy, two in one day.
Prepared. I even got it marked up.
That's not good.
Chair Mesley, while Sue's out of the room, let me, I guess, make a few comments about this. This is really it's an ongoing work product. We heard the message loud and clear about things needing to change. We started changing. Some of the things in here are things that we, in fact, have already done, or things that we have started in place and they're moving. Some of them are scheduled to start after the legislature concludes, and we've got a little more time to do some of the things. But this is not just a plan. It is a work program for the agency, and we are well on our way on a number of these tasks. That page. When we actually, and again, perhaps by way of background, it's organized into four sets of goals. The first set of actions is intended to improve our budget and management accountability. The second set of actions, which begins on page 8, is to change the agency regulatory culture. The third set of actions, which begins on page 16, is to streamline processes and examine reform options, which is one of the discussions we had earlier here today. And the last set of actions is to, on page 19, is to align the strategic plan and performance measures. So that's how this plan is structured, is actions that support those four basic goals. And what I think Teddy just gave to you is a replacement package per a request, I believe, from Representative Morgan for more detail. And this is action item 3 under the first goal of developing a better accountability system for budget and management. So this responds to some questions that Representative Morgan had about aligning our budget structure and our accounting structure. And it also responds, I think, to a conversation you had with Sue McGlashan about how are we going to do this. It's my intent, whether or not we can talk either LFO or BAM into a rotation assignment person, is the intent to involve them directly through whatever mechanism works for them, wanting the expertise of both LFO and BAM and how to do a better system. And what has been added in terms of more detail on this page is an attempt to show you where the various systems, and if you want to get very technical here, I'll call up Teddy because she's the one who really knows what all that stands for. But the basic concept is to get the budgeting structure and the accounting structure aligned and make it make more sense. And to give us a more accountable budget. And that's the intent of that.
Okay, and that replaces
it's
page three
of what's
coming here.
It just adds a little more detail to what was in the page 3 that you got on Monday.
Chair, Representative Krieger.
Ma'am, the timeline would be dependent on whether we get our work done so they're available.
Chair Mesley.
I would hope.
Representative Krieger. I believe that's correct.
Well, we could leave tonight, couldn't we? Okay, I vote for that.
Have I wasted enough time, Mike, so that you now have a copy in front of you?
We do.
Okay. Yeah. So that picks us up on page 4 of 23. Again, starting with action items supporting the goal of a greater budget management accountability. The fourth item I've actually already referred to today, and that's the notion of charging the division managers with direct responsibility to manage their budget, prioritize, and spend within the available resources. Timeline on that is to start as soon as we have a legislatively approved budget. We'll figure the numbers. And when I indicate, for example, no cost increase above base budget, it's just meant to say that we will be doing this. This will be part of Teddy's job, and we have part of the accountant's job to figure out what those numbers are. Item 5 I've also actually already talked about, and that's the notion of budget control of AG expenditures. I don't know that we need to talk any more there. Item 6 on the top of page 5, develop in consultation with local governments a prioritized grant allocation plan for general fund, technical assistance, and periodic review grants. I think this is a need that lots of people recognize. When I first developed the action plan, it was a need that was so apparent to me coming out of the coastal program where we did this last biennium and developed an allocation plan with priorities and criteria and guidelines for how that grant money is to be distributed. It was obvious to me that we needed to do that for our general fund grants. It has also obvious to a lot of other people. And just in a conversation yesterday, the working group on House Bill 2909, the periodic review group, recognizes the need to have such a group. And what I would envision happening is this, in fact, morphs into what's defined in 2909. We have started initial conversations with city and county planning directors to get some stakeholder input. There's a timing issue here in terms of when do we issue grants. So we wanted to start the conversation as soon as possible. If we get instructions from either you through this budget process or through 2909, we'll make it fit so it's the same process and not be two separate processes.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Krieger.
Yeah, some of these cities and counties have been involved in the process of periodic review for, what, 10, 15, 20 years?
A few, yeah.
And
30 years.
How does the history carry forward to the new people? Because some of the people who were part of that within your agencies and within the cities and counties are dead. You know, they've died since the thing started. So is there any way you can expedite a process that gets them through this thing within a reasonable length of time?
Chair Mazzaglia and Representative Krieger, yes. And there are basically two things. Right. One is starting in about mid-April, I sort of put together a SWAT team and said, okay, kids, let's move this along. The actions that we have in the department, let's clear them out. And we've cleared about half of what are currently in the department.
And what was the total amount at first?
No.
I was thinking about 44, but am I wrong?
Yeah, that I keep that chart updated, which is why I didn't want to give you a number right off the top of my head because I keep forgetting. As of Teddy, what's the date on this?
I'm sorry. That's as of
June 20th.
June 20th.
Okay. What I'm handing out is that as of June 20th, we have left in the department in terms of tasks, numbers of tasks to review, 32 city tasks and 4 county tasks. Since April the 15th, we have approved a total of 32 tasks, happens to be the same number, and t- terminated is such an odd word, but terminated, taken out of the process, 2, 4, 6,
how about finalized?
The finalized are the tasks, you know, the tasks approved. The terminated are, you don't need to be here, please, you know, please don't be here. Now, there are a bunch of other tasks that reside in the cities and counties, and House Bill 2909 is being designed to address that. And I urge you to help us clear the backlog and support that.
So of these 36, none of them have completed all tasks yet and have completed their periodic review? Or I would assume that these have one task left, probably not.
Your question is, has anybody finished all tasks? And that's a question I will need to ask somebody about.
So there's the April list, and then the long list is June?
This is the list as of June. So on one side that says submitted periodic review task under review on the side one, that's currently what's in-house.
That's June, okay.
And some of those, you'll notice, were received in April, May, and June. And if you flip on the other side, it says task approvals since April the 15th, and then the most recent date on there is actually June 20th. So,
okay.
And then the jurisdiction's terminated since April. So this is, one side is the what's left in-house, and the other side is what has left the house since April 15th.
So, again, what's the total number of tasks completed?
Since April 15th, 32 cities and 4 counties.
Okay, I see.
4 county tasks, 32 city tasks.
Okay. Chair?
Representative Krieger.
On here is Brookings Transportation System Plan, and I mentioned, I just got a note here that county planner is calling at 3 regarding that. How does that affect the ability of people within the city or businesses within the city or out of the city to large or a new business to come in before that's done?
Chairman Messerly, Representative Krieger, you probably know more about that case than I do. My understanding is for that one, the city was in the process of doing periodic review. They decided to add as a task completion of a transportation system plan along with other tasks that were in their periodic review. My understanding of what's going on now, and again, we talked a little bit about this morning, is that there is at least one property owner or developer wanting to develop a piece of property that, if it were developed, would have some impact on Highway 101. And then they have done some kind of a traffic study and are in middle of consultations with ODOT as to what the effect of that might be. That's something I guess I would like to hear the end of your conversation this afternoon.
The point I think that it gets at is that Highway 101 is the main street through most coastal communities. So our entire ability to have development or business to expand can be dependent on whether these things or this type of expansion is allowed before the plan is done, and that's what I want to find out today, what role ODOT has with the county planning, that type of thing.
And Chairman Esley, Representative Krieger, in general, if a task is approved, actions under that task can go forward. So for this particular one, if they would finalize the transportation system plan, tasks that would be addressed by that plan could then go forward. They wouldn't have to wait for another task on an unrelated subject to be approved.
I understand, Mr. Chair, follow up, but that could be as long as 2 years.
case, then that's where the problem is. That's what I'm trying to get my hand around, what this means. And I'll know this afternoon. I'll get back to you.
Perhaps just one or two other comments with respect to the general fund grants. I believe it's critical, particularly since I know we will have a smaller general fund pot of money, to have this prioritized system so that we are accountable to you and local jurisdictions are accountable to you as well. And we will be working with local governments probably through the process that's identified in 2909 when that eventually comes through, and I'm sure it will have a different number by then as well. Let's move on a little bit, I guess, unless you have any more questions about the grant pot. Again, this is still in the category of approving accountability. Notice when I joined, took over the role of acting director, that there were some other things that I heard from staff that we needed and didn't have. Item 7 is establish an agency contract processing policy and appoint a central coordinator for reviewing and tracking all contracts. We've started this, and it's just to put in essentially an accountability process for our contracting. And I will also give thanks to Teddy Leland, our fiscal analyst, for saying that we needed this and pointing that out as a real need. Item 8, initiate a permanent director recruitment. We've talked about this a bit before. We do have the governor's office committed to help the Land Conservation and Development Commission in the recruitment of a permanent director upon completion of the legislative session. And the lead for that would be the governor's office and the LCDC executive committee. And the cost, and again, it's one of those items that we will do within our base budget. The parenthetical phrase there is simply to say that as I look at the budget subcategories, our total allowed for employee recruitment and development, which would cover these and other kinds of recruitment and development costs, is slightly over $7,000.
Now, how is that an appointment made by the commission?
Chair Mesley, that's correct.
And the governor has no formal authority on that?
That's correct. No formal authority.
And the Senate does not confirm?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, normally when there's a new director of a department, they have an audit done so that the new director comes in with a clean bill of health. Is that part of the cost that the department absorbs? Or?
Chair Mesley, that is correct. The Secretary of State's office routinely does an audit. They have completed their part of the audit in the agency and are in the process of preparing their report. We've had a conversation with them, an initial conversation with them on their findings. We do not yet have a draft report from them.
Do we know, or do you have in your plan, as the commission discussed, a date for when they hope to have this process complete?
Senator Mesley, I believe that they've not discussed it.
Thank you.
Page 7, item 9 is develop and implement a policy to designate authority for decision-making within the department. This develops from something I observed when I came in the department, and I was frankly having a hard time figuring out who was making what decisions. And when approvals were made, who was making them. So what I have asked the managers to do is to sort of develop an architecture that says this kind of decision will be made by this position. What decisions need to be at the manager's level and what decisions need to be at the director's level. And this is one we have not yet really started on, but one that I think is important to be very clear about where the decision-making authority lies on every kind of decision. This is not to imply that we have no guidelines. We certainly have some, but I want it to be much clearer. Item 10, report regularly to LCDC on major department decisions. This is, again, an attempt for sort of accountability through reporting to make sure the LCDC knows what the department is doing. There is a tendency, in any organization, for a policy body such as the commission to know only the stuff that becomes a negative issue. So there's unless it becomes a negative issue, they don't know about it. So I want to get that full picture in front of the commission, and also so they have a background when an issue at some point is appealed, they will have followed the issue through the process, and they don't come in at the end point. And I think this is important to help the department function better and help the commission function better.
So that's the report of the director?
Yeah, what we will do is through the director's report, which is a standard item in the commission meeting, is that is the vehicle through which I can inform the commission of sort of things that are happening. The report I just signed off on actually this morning includes, for example, a list of all the contracts we've entered into in the last month or so. And I hope to make that a more powerful kind of report so the commission can be more fully engaged. So that concludes the 10 items that we've identified targeted at improving budget and management accountability. It moves us to page 8 of 23 and the second goal of changing the agency regulatory culture. Again, this is something I believe we've started, and again, it's something I believe will take a couple of years. It will take some resources, and it takes some commitment. The first item is establish performance expectations for all staff and manage for achievement. This is the performance expectation memo that I shared with you back in April that identified sort of the key expectations I had for all staff and how they do business. And I noted, by the way, that when I typed this out, the spell checker didn't check the second little bullet there. Now before no should actually be how before no. And that the idea there is before we have a staff person say, no, you can't do something, work on how could that something be done, and work with the parties to kind of explain and explore. So it didn't mean to say now before no. I typed this myself. You might find more typos in there. But we issued this in April and shared it with you, at that time. It's been discussed by the division managers with all staff. We've discussed it at an all-staff meeting. The expectations are in effect, and they are now part of our employee performance evaluation process. The second item, moving to page 9, provide training to all DLCs.
Excuse me now, if I can go back to number 1
sure.
briefly. I'm almost embarrassed to ask it. You must have job descriptions of all positions. And that doesn't cover many of these items right here?
Chair Mesley, most of the position descriptions describe what a position does. And that's their function, so the job description in terms of functions and what. This is a how. By distributing it to all staff and talking about it, now adds the hows on top of the whats.
Representative Krieger.
Sure. Man, we've had conversations, I think, since I have known you about being problem solvers, solution finders, not roadblocks, and this kind of addresses mm-hmm. that. And we talked about training and the mindset of people. like you say, it's going to take a while. How often is the focus run past your people through a training, memos, where they continue to hear that this is the direction we're moving, so they're encouraged and supported that there is this is a fact going to happen? It's not something you say and then that's the end of it.
Chairman, as I represent, there's sort of two pieces to that. One is the formal and one is the informal. I think in the informal, I am trying myself and instructing the managers and working with staff to actually live this. We had a conversation just a day or so ago with someone who was working very hard on a work product and was spending an incredible amount of time. And we had the conversation of the perfect is the enemy of the good. This product doesn't need to be perfect. It just needs to be good. It is better for it to be out the door than for it to be sitting around for another month being made perfect. So that's the informal, you know, you do that every day. The formal training piece of it will be a little harder because of the resources that are not available. We don't have the resources to send folks to the really good trainings. What I'm hoping to do and have already started talking with the Department of Consumer and Business Services and their Office of Regulatory Streamlining. I've had just sort of initial conversations with Jim Brown to find out what they do at Forestry and see if my little agency can kind of piggyback onto some of the good training opportunities they have over there. So I'm going to try to find training opportunities within our fairly limited budget. So.
And we've talked today about changing mindsets and looking outside the box and all those kind of things. I know you've got some very knowledgeable staff, but many of my colleagues and I have also talked about one of the things we have to adjust to in this process is how slow and how long it takes to turn the ship. How long have your, what's the average length of time your staff has been with the department? Maybe you need to get back to me on that.
Yeah, Chair Mesley, I don't
really
have
what
it.
I would like is if you could take this schedule of employees and just run alongside it with the length of time each one of those positions. I don't care who they are. That's not the point. But just to get an idea whether you've got staff that has been there a long, long time and that has a lot of history or whether there's people that are...
Chair Mesley, I'll be glad to do that and get back to you. I will point out to you that, not surprisingly, we've had a number of retirements, and they've been retirements that have allowed me to bring new people who were in the department at lower levels to select those folks who are good problem solvers, have demonstrated the capability to do that and to give them some management responsibilities. So we've got right now a mix. Everybody who is on the management team is a relative newcomer to the agency. But what I will do is come back with an org chart with years of service marked on it.
I have to ask this. Are you contracting back any of those retirees?
Senator Mesley, we are currently not contracting, but we certainly are bringing back as a temp Dale Jordan, who was the North Coast field rep, who's doing some training for local jurisdictions. We brought back as a temp the retired IT specialist who worked until we could hire a new one, and we've just hired the new one within the last couple of weeks. And he's gone now. Is that it? Okay. So there's two.
Well, I don't want the wrong idea going out here. I think it is appropriate sometimes, but I'm fearful, I think as many of us are, that if it's a permanent long-range arrangement of bringing back the people that have retired, that ultimately you're not bringing new blood up into the organization, and that can be a real problem down the road. So Appreciate your input.
And Chair Mezzoli, it's easy for me to answer this question because the agency is fairly small, so I can sort of think of the people and I'll give you the answer.
Okay.
So we're on the subject of training. Item two, that training will be the head responsibility of our Operations Services Division Manager to search out and find those opportunities. We've already initiated some discussion with the Office on Regulatory Streamline and have sent a couple of our people over for some of their intensive seminars on regulatory streamlining. Item three, institute planners network meetings for all regions of the state. This particular item developed from a pattern of practice that the Coastal Program had, which was to go out in the communities and gather together twice a year all the coastal planners. And we would invite the wide range of coastal planners. Sometimes it would be the city recorder of Lakeside, who is she's the planning person, all the way up to a planning director of a large county. We bring them together in what we called network meetings, which was an opportunity for the department to hear the issues and problems that these planners were dealing with. It also provided an opportunity for them to talk to each other. We often found really interesting discussions developed between different planners who discovered that they were facing the same kind of problem in different jurisdictions and hadn't realized it, and so they could talk amongst each other and how to solve it. It also provided a really good opportunity for us to talk about, as an agency, things like what the upcoming grant opportunities were or what maybe some special things that were happening. I think this works well, and the notion here is that we would take that concept into other parts of the state and have what we call these network meetings of sort of getting the regionally planners together to talk to us about what's going on in their worlds, to talk to each other, and to share information. And I think the coastal ones we've held already this spring, one on the north coast and one on the south coast, and we are working and putting together network meetings in the southern Oregon and in eastern Oregon for this fall. And again, this is the notion of getting out in the communities.
And as I read through the questionnaire again, there was a pretty strong desire, I think, to actually come in and meet with the department's personnel mm-hmm. on their premises in their meetings mm-hmm. or whatever. And I think it was suggested that 2 to 3 times a year mm-hmm. develop. The question, which wasn't spelled out in the survey, is how often does your staff meet with the local governments now?
Sure, Mesley. Right now, I think it's hard to come up with an average because basically what they're doing is responding to problems. So they might be meeting with Gold Beach 3 or 4 times in over a several-month period and then not again for 6 or 7 months. So it's very periodic. It's hard to sort of say what the average is. The survey, you're right, talked about, 2 or 3 times a year. I think it would be a goal to get to every jurisdiction 2 or 3 times a year. We're not there.
That might be something to consider for a performance measure.
In that vein, on page 10 of 23, the notion of conducting directors listening tours. And this goes, I think, another step, which says the DLCD director needs to be out and needs to be visiting local jurisdictions, visiting the elected officials, visiting the planning commissioners. And the commitment here is to start that. I think that's incredibly important to happen. And I think it's worth the money to spend on the travel.
Well, I'm intrigued by your word listening tours. And
and that's another question I had from the survey. When there was discussions of going out and talking to staff or talking to the commission members, or it seemed to me it's kind of a mindset. Are you there to listen, or are you there to tell them how the state says you have to do things? And that's being kind of crude, but I think that's how they perceive it. Mm-hmm. And I know that's how I felt when I was on the Planning Commission. And there's a big difference in how they listen or the credibility you develop.
Chair Besler, that's why I called it a listening tour. Yeah.
But that's the first time I've seen you call it that, when you talk about staff going out in the community. That's a point I made. But I think that's the right direction. I support that very much.
I would make one other note, sort of in the listening mode, and to note to you that in the May LCDC meeting, the LCDC adopted an official policy statement that said they heard the message that economic development was a huge issue to rural Oregon, and the commission was then committing by this policy statement to hold regular meetings in communities throughout the state and to provide a forum at each of those meetings to ask local officials and citizens to come in and talk to the commission. And the first one of those will be in September. It'll be in Ontario. And I think this is another really positive way of saying the commission recognizes and wants to talk over some of these issues.
Just a footnote on that. I was looking at the latest unemployment data for May, and in many of our Portland metro is right up there with a lot of the rural communities now. Still some that are higher. I mean, when you get to Eastern Oregon and some spotted areas in the west side, too, but there's not a lot of difference when you look at the unemployment. There's a huge difference in how long they've had. But the state's got problems across the state, not just in rural Oregon now. Okay.
Yes, number five, on page 11, engage the local officials advisory committee (LOAC) in the review of agency performance and program function. The LOAC is a group that I think we can use better than we've. That sounded sort of predatory, but can provide some really important services that we've not asked them to do in the past. And the notion of this item first is to work with Association of Counties and League of Cities to complete the membership roster, because we don't have a full component right now, and to develop a work program that would involve the LOC more directly in the department and commission activities, and hope to use the experience and advice of the LOAC members as we continue on this sort of listening and discussing what the future of land use for the state is. Number six, page 12, integrate field staff into local communities. Again, we talked about that briefly just a little bit ago. We now have all of the field staff stationed in the regions for which they have responsibility. Let me point out to you that we only have 9 of these field staff, which is a reduction from the 0103 level where we had 14. And some of them are spread very, very thin. We have 2 people essentially covering, for example, all of Central and Eastern Oregon. But they do live in Central and Eastern Oregon. So we've at least got the people in the regions where they're serving.
Where are those folks stationed?
The 2 in Central Oregon are in Bend. On down under cost, for your information, it's hopefully not more detailed than you wanted, but I actually gave you the rental costs for the various field offices. The two in Metro, the one we just established in Eugene, Central Point, where we have one person, Bend, and then we have a Metro area field staff located in the Portland office. That the Portland office also has some of the federal GIS people up there, which is why you see a federal piece. I think this is the first step of getting people out in those regions.
So you're moving an individual to Eugene. I'm confused when I look at the top bullet points and then compare that to your cost.
Oh, I didn't get the Eugene one listed.
Doesn't matter.
I'm
right?
Sorry. We have one in Eugene. There's a field rep. The Metro field rep is in Portland. There are two central Eastern Oregon field reps in Bend, one southern field rep in Central Point, the two coastal ones in Waldport, and we have four field reps who are sort of the Metro Willamette Valley team. One of those is located in Metro, one is located in Eugene, and two are in Salem. So what you're seeing here was the situation 2 or 3 weeks ago where we had three in Salem. We just got one moved to Eugene.
So I said there's one in Metro, one in Eugene, and two in Salem?
Yes.
How often do you require those field people to come to Salem?
They come in certainly on an as-needed basis. They also come in for regular staff meetings with the other field reps. There's one actually tomorrow. And I think that happens more or less about once a month. And I apologize for not updating this particular one and catching the Eugene one.
And I have to say, I have the same concern about the Bend office as I do the Coast office.
Yep.
Eastern Oregon is a big area for to be both of them in one spot.
Chair Mesley, yeah, I did want to point out to you that, yes, that's two people covering a gigantic territory. And I said there are some synergies for having two people in one office.
But just the travel is very time-consuming.
And Chair Mesley, I also must take this opportunity to point out that one of the recommendations from that University of Oregon survey was there needed to be more field reps. And Chair Mesley, I agree.
Got about three more minutes, ma'am.
Okay. Clock's not there. Page 13, number 7, we were just talking about that, is the a number of field reps. We can all cross our fingers, hope the budget situation improves, and you might see a package from us in 05-07 asking for some field reps. Page 14 addresses the website, again, which was an issue in that U of O survey. Our website is currently out of date. There's lots of information there, but it's a little hard to navigate. We have just hired a new IT person. We are about to hire a communications officer. One of the first jobs of those two people will be to first update the information on the website and then tell us how to make it better.
And as I go back to the survey, and you, as you know, you're rated pretty low on the website usage. And I try to analyze, well, why would that be? There's probably several reasons it could be. As you were just indicated, it could be a very difficult website mm-hmm. to access. I would assume that most people in planning offices are pretty good on computers and know how to work the Internet. So it could be that the information is not useful or the information is not credible, or at least their perception is. There could be a lot of reasons that they don't access the website or the Internet. And it just seemed to me that it was a real, it glared out at me, but there's more to that story that maybe didn't come out in the
Yeah, Chair Mazur, my perception is there is a lot of very good information that you can get off the website. My perception is it's hard to find. It's there, but the navigation process is, to me, not as obvious as I would like it to be.
I'm sure Teddy's just dying to chase the generators. Chair,
I've got a phone call coming in.
She reminds me that there are a few planning commissioners that don't have computers.
Man, I think we better quit. Our time is up, and my only other committee member has to go. So with that, thank you. We'll reschedule another time. And with
that, sir.
I'll close the work session, and we'll adjourn the committee meeting. And we don't know when we're...